Once upon a time, a singer named Roger Miller recorded this song.
2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12 4-bit room. I'm a man of means by no means, king of the road.
And shortly thereafter, a singer named Jody Miller recorded this song.
4 floors to wax and scrub, and there's a dirty old ring in the tub. I'll get a maid someday, but till then I'm queen of the house.
And those two recordings lived happily ever after. It is my pleasure to present the singer who sang Queen of the House, Jody Miller, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
You were not born with the name Jody Miller. You actually were born Myrna Joy Miller.
That's what they tell me, yeah.
Okay, it must be true then.
I like the name Myrna, but it always was an obstacle. People mispronounced it. So when I started my career in singing, I first used Joy Miller.
And then
when I signed with Capitol, they wanted me to change it to Jody, so I said, fine.
We're going to get to the point a little bit later on how people thought incorrectly that you were related to Roger Miller. We can understand why people might think that, but...
Well, we could understand.
Yeah. Right now, though, we're putting the cart before the horse. I did want to talk briefly about your sister who mentored you. Her name was Pat.
Yeah, Pat. She's about 7 years older than I am, and she died in 1983 at 48 years old. An early age in my life, she took hold of me and taught me music. She taught me how to harmonize, and she taught a few things on the guitar to me. Real smart, real artsy. She painted, and she was just really a neat person to be around, and even though she was a lot older than me, she taught me a lot. It took me under her wing, so to speak, even though I was, you know, how sisters kind of, you know, hate each other and all that stuff, but she liked me, and I liked her. She was really beneficial in my life.
Not only that, but also, your dad, he built fiddles from a tree in the yard.
Yeah, we had this old house that we lived in Oakland, California, and he did that. There were eucalyptus trees around this place we lived, and I just couldn't believe that he could do that.
Well,
but
unbelievable.
He did.
Maybe the tree was not too happy about it, but musically, it worked out just fine, and your dad would accompany both you and your sister. And what I'm going to do right now is going to surprise people. I'm going to play a little excerpt from something by a very well-known opera singer. Here it is. Now that was Mario Lanza doing La Donna Mobile, or...
Well, something like that. That record was very important to me. I found that record on my mother's turntable, and I just went crazy. I mean, I just thought he was the greatest singer in the world, and I learned that song phonetically and sang it, you know. Even though my chances of getting on the opera was nothing, you know.
No,
I couldn't do it.
But what amazes me, and I have done interviews with so many different people over the last couple of years, and almost to a person, you know, if I asked them what inspired you to sing, they would tell me it was the pop singers of the day. But in this particular case, since Mario Lanza sounds really nothing like you, it really seemed like a stretch. And yet it was really that particular recording by him that made you know that you wanted to be a singer.
That's right.
Tremendous.
That encouraged me, filled me with inspiration to do it. You know, his voice was so good. I thought, maybe I can do that.
You attended Blanchard High School, and I understand that you formed a trio. What were they called?
The Melodies. Two schoolmates of mine. We did pretty good. You know, we went to state and won a lot of times, and then we were asked to sing at the local functions around Blanchard, which weren't very many, but it was like the Lions Club luncheon or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But we worked a little bit, but nothing serious.
And what were you doing? What kind of material?
We would do mostly the McGuire sisters stuff, the hits that they had. They were real hot during that time, and then we threw in little pop standards, you know, like Let's Sip a Soda at the Sweet Shop. You remember that one, Ronnie?
Why, of course.
You never heard it in my life. Don't tell her.
You graduated from Blanchard High School in 1959.
Yeah.
You did go to California, but as far as when you actually started to really get into singing, That was when you got back to Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, that's true. I went out to California every summer to see my mother. My folks were split up, and I'd spend every summer with my mother. Well, when I graduated, I went on out there to the Bay Area and tried to get a job, and I couldn't, so I came back to Oklahoma. That's where my boyfriend was.
Okay.
And we were going together, and I got me a job at the state capitol and lived at the YWCA in Oklahoma City and started getting interested in folk music. There was a library right down the street from the Y, and I would go into the library at night and study and get those folk songs and all the stories connected with the songs. Like Old Aunt Rhody's Goose and
Old Aunt Rhody's Goose.
Well, you know, go tell Aunt Rhody that the old gray goose is dead. I mean,
oh, okay.
Very important song.
I knew that song as Aunt Rhody. Go tell Aunt Rhody.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You must have known the words to about a million tunes.
Actually, 200. I had a repertoire of 200 folk songs, and I was on my way, buddy.
But not, ladies and gentlemen, not only could Jody sing all these by memory, but she could also tell you the story behind each one of them.
Well, you know, in folk music, that's what you're supposed to do. You know?
That's
you're
right.
You know why you're singing that song.
Now, I want to say one thing about Monty, which I didn't mention earlier. He's a horse breeder, right?
Actually, Monty's family was in the horse business, and he was so young, he didn't quite know what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we were going together in Oklahoma City, I was living at the Lion. He got interested in training, so he started out training horses. Later became a breeder, and the breeding part was where he really, really came out and made a name for himself.
You've been married for how long?
47 years.
It was a well-known actor who helped you get into Capitol Records.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Dale Robertson. Dale had a television series called Wells Fargo in the 60s on NBC. And Dale was from Oklahoma, and he was also in the horse business. My husband was too, or his family was. And my husband, Monty, thought, let's contact Dale. Maybe he can help us get something going.
Wow.
So that's what we did. I went
Fantastic.
To his offices in Hollywood and made an appointment with him, sat down and talked to him, sang for him, and he put his hand on the phone and called someone in the A&R department at Capitol who he knew very well, and they said, well, let's arrange an audition for her and send it up there and see what they think. And all of this took a lot of time, but that's how it was done, and without Dale, I don't think I could have done it.
You signed with Capitol Records. The year was 1963, and what was your first record for Capitol?
He Walks Like a Man. There's a big name in the country music business by the name of Cliffy Stone. Cliffy was the owner of Central Songs in Hollywood, and Cliffy had a connection with Capitol Records. And when he found out I had signed with Capitol, he shot me a bunch of songs. Well, his top man over there at Central Songs was Joe Allison, and Joe and his wife Audrey wrote a big hit called He'll Have to Go. Joe was a great song man, and he had this young 17-year-old songwriter come in with a song called He Walks Like a Man, and he shot that song over to me at Capitol and said, let's record that with her. And they said, well, she's a folk singer. And I had come out with my first folk LP,
right.
Wednesday's Child is Full of Woe, and it didn't do anything at all. So they said, well, folk music is kind of on its way out. Let's try something new with her. So I walked into the Studio A there in Hollywood, Capitol Records, with 42 musicians waiting for me to do the session. And I was just overwhelmed. I just thought, oh, this is heaven, you know. And I loved it. See, back then, all of this recorded together. The tracks weren't laid and all that stuff like they are now. It was all, everybody's
there together, right. Yeah.
And, you know, if somebody made a mistake, you had to start over. We got that song on the fifth take, which was remarkable for a big orchestra like that.
He walks like a man, and he talks like a man. He schemes like a man, and whenever he can, he dreams like a man. But it's the little boy. It's find a little boy, and every now and then, when he's happy or blue, that little boy comes shining through. He walks like a man, he talks like a man, he lives like a man, and since our love begun, he gives like a man. But it's the little boy, it's the little boy in him I love. But it's the little boy I love. But it's the little boy I love. But it's the little boy.
Walks Like a Man had become a regional hit, and by that I mean it was only a hit in one region of the United States,
right,
and that was the West Coast. And so I got to working up and down the coast and teen hop, stuff like that. I was on American Bandstand.
Before you recorded Queen of the House, you got to see the world, and then some.
Yeah, I was invited to the San Remo Song Festival in Italy on the strength of He Walks Like a Man. And I went over there to Italy and was entered in the festival and recorded a song called Io Che Non Vivo, which in English means You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. Much later on, Dusty Springfield had this English version. So I'd stayed in Europe 2 or 3 months because I recorded, and I went to Paris, and I went to Germany, and I recorded in German, and I recorded in Italian, and I did quite a bit with capital EMI over there. And so when I came back, Roger Miller had the hit smash, King of the Road, and I had a new producer at Capitol. The producer I did have there at Capitol left, and so Steve Douglas became my producer. Now, Steve was a saxophone player that had been employed by Phil Spector on all of his sessions with all the girl singers and trios, and he played saxophone on all those sessions. And he got a job as a producer there at Capitol, and it was just phenomenal. He called me when I got back from Europe and said, come on in, I want to meet you, and I have a song already. What happened is the head of A&R at Capitol Country Division, Ken Nelson, who was recording people like Ferlin Husky and Gene Shepherd and people like that, had this song written by one of his artists, Mary Taylor, and he couldn't use it for some reason, and so he gave it to Steve, and Steve said, hey, this is a hit. And so we went into the studio that week and cut it, and couldn't get it out fast enough for the buyers because the orders for that record were phenomenal. DJ started playing it against Roger's song, King of the Road. Mm-hmm. It was a great thing for the DJs. They loved it. And so they made a hit out of that song, and then the sales were really good. The pressing plant was up the road a bit from L.A., Santa Maria,
wow,
where Capitol's production plant is, and they told me they couldn't fill the orders fast enough.
When I first heard Queen of the House, I have to admit, when they said, this is kind of an answer record to Roger Miller's King of the Road, here's Jody Miller, Queen of the House, and I was saying to myself, I wonder how she's related to Roger Miller.
That's
Am I the only one that felt that way?
Everybody said.
We're going to listen to it right now, and I guess doing that record, you will forever be known as Queen of the House.
Yeah, that's right.
Up every day at 6, bacon and eggs to fix. 4 kids from 1 to 4. Pretty soon there'll be one more. I got 4 floors to wax and scrub, and there's a dirty old ring in the tub. I'll get a maid someday, but till then I'm queen of the house. Good time to fix my hair. Need a new dress to wear. Old clothes will have to do, 'cause the kids all need new shoes. I got Bridge Club each Tuesday night. He goes out with the boys and gets tired. But when the evening's through, comes a home to the queen of the house. I know the milkman, the iceman, they come every day. They give me tips on the horses to play. And when I got the time to spare, I sit and wish that I had picked a rich millionaire. I sing up every day at six, taking an exit fix. Four kids from one to four. Pretty soon there'll be one more. But Sundays I'm mighty glad we send the kids to his mom and dad. It's the day that makes me glad I'm queen of the house. Up every day it's bacon and eggs to fix. Four kids from one to four. Pretty soon there'll be one more, but Sundays I'm not.
Do you feel like the queen of the house in real life?
I really, really do. I'm a housewife, I'm a mother and a grandma, and so that's kind of me.
That record has held up so well over the years.
You're right. It's part novelty, you know.
The interesting thing about Queen of the House is technically it was not a song parody. Technically it was not even an answer record because it had nothing really to do with the King of the Road.
That's right, it wasn't. You're exactly
so it was,
right.
So it was neither a parody nor an answer record, but it did share the same tune.
Yeah, that's all it did.
And
maybe the last name of the artist.
Yeah, and the last name of the artist. Interesting side note, there was an ad in the trade papers. Actually, it was Billboard magazine. Very interesting ad. They had pictures of the Beatles and the Beach Boys, and a picture of you. And it said at the very top, they never miss. And then it said, neither will Jody Miller. And you know something?
Yeah.
They were right. You didn't miss. It was a big hit. And as icing on the cake, you won a Grammy Award for Queen of the House.
I was nominated twice that year. I was nominated for Best New Artist, and I was nominated for Best Performance on a Single by a Country Artist.
The award you won was the latter one, Best Country Performance. And I seem to recall that Jerry Lewis was hosting the show, and your acceptance speech didn't come out exactly the way you planned.
Oh, yes, I was so nervous, and I said, I'd like to thank everybody who knows who they are. And what I meant by that...
You meant to say you know who you are.
Yeah. And Jerry whispered in my ear, he said, can I use that?
Getting back down to earth. Going to play a song called Silver Threads and Golden Needles. That's been done by a lot of people.
Yeah. Gene Shepherd, I knew, had it. I believe Rose Maddox cut it way back in the 40s.
Eventually,
had it.
Eventually, Linda Ronstadt even did the song, too.
Linda Ronstadt had the last one, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
It was our follow-up record to Queen of the House.
Silver threads and golden needles cannot mend.
I once introduced that by mistake. I said silver threads and golden noodles. didn't quite make. When I wasn't the professional DJ that I am today, I was doing things like that.
Well, at least you got a laugh out of it.
Oh, right? Yeah.
That's what life's all about. You got to smile a little bit.
Well, back in 1963, I was talking about this new folk singer named Bob Dylan, and I know I have that on tape somewhere. It's going to be a big star. Well, I was right about it being a big star, but couldn't pronounce his name. Anyway, I am Ronnie Allen, and before we move to Home of the Brave, I want to ask you about something called Scopitone. Back in the 60s, I was working at the Concord Hotel. I was in Kiamisha Lake, New York. I was on the social staff, and they had this, what looked like a video jukebox. In fact, that's what it was. It was like a video jukebox, but instead of just hearing records, you would actually see videos. It was really avant-garde back then.
Yeah, before its time, really.
Yeah, and they had a few videos by you, and one of my favorites was The Race Is On.
Oh, yeah. Scopitones were done in film, not video. They were little movies. The quality was excellent.
Yes, it was.
And back then, in the 60s, paying 25 cents in a jukebox was unheard of. You had to pay a quarter to see that artist sing a song. Now, there weren't very many of us that did that. I think Bobby Darin did one.
Yeah.
I did. They were wonderful. I loved them. And I shot what I did, and then they brought in other pictures and made it the way they wanted to make
it. Well,
it wasn't all of us in one batch together. And The Race Is On, there are dancing girls coming in and dancing while I'm singing. And
I know.
They weren't dancing while I was there, you know.
In the final take, they're dancing. This video, The Race Is On, it is on YouTube, so you can watch it. Song was very popular at the time. It was a country hit for George Jones, and it was a pop hit for Jack Jones, no relation. Here we go with the Jody Miller, Roger Miller, George Jones, and Jack Jones. Scopey Tone, it was basically music videos before you ever used the term music videos. It was
That's correct.
Back in the 60s. We're going to move to a song right now called Home of the Brave, and Queen of the House, Home of the Brave. Each of them were four-word titles with of the as the second and the third word.
Yeah, you know what? I never thought about that. I know.
Well, I bring up very strange things sometimes. The songs were very different. Now, Queen of the House not only became a pop hit, but became a country hit as well. Home of the Brave was pretty much strictly just a pop hit, but it was a very big
hit. That's exactly right.
Who brought you the song, Home of the Brave?
Okay, well, Steve Douglas was my producer at Capitol, who brought me Queen of the House, and he was still working at Capitol and producing my stuff. During that time, we went to New York, and I forget what I was actually doing in New York. Maybe it was one of the television shows or something. But anyway, Steve and I had dinner with Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann, and at that dinner, they suggested he do their song, Home of the Brave. They said, we need this cut, and you can have it first if you want it, you know. And Steve jumped at it again. Steve was excellent on picking material. And Steve had worked with Phil Spector so much that he wanted to use that sound.
Right.
Well, unbeknownst to us, Phil had already cut this with a trio of girls.
Bonnie and the Treasures.
Yeah. We recorded it, and Capitol released it. And all of a sudden, it was just really going strong. Well, Phil Spector jumped up and said, okay, well, I was the first one to cut this. Well, it didn't make any difference whether he was the first one or whatever, because it wasn't doing anything. That's why Barry and Cynthia wanted us to cut it, because they knew that he sure didn't have the hit on it. So anyway, he re-released it, because we had ours, and so he thought on the strength of ours, he could probably capitulate on it.
It didn't work for Phil. They weren't buying his.
Yeah.
I understand that Phil actually took ads, and it was basically telling people,
don't play Jody's record. Big one-page ad saying, we had it first, and all that. But what it came down to was sales, and he didn't have the sales, and we did.
Board says he can't come to school no more unless he wears his hair like he wore it before. The PTA and all of the mothers say he ought to look like the others. Home of the brave. Kids all laugh at his hair and his funny clothes. And more than once he's gone home with a bloody nose. He's not like them.
Yeah, actually, that's interesting, because you can't always go by peak positions on the chart in terms of like how many copies records sell. it's kind of a similarity. You know, Phil was very much involved with the record He's a Rebel, which was allegedly by the Crystals, but was really not. It was really Darlene Love and the Blossoms doing that record. But there's kind of a similarity in the in what the song's about. It's kind of about a rebel wants to do his own thing, kind type of thing.
He wrote He's a Rebel.
He's a Rebel was written by Gene Pitney, the late Gene Pitney, great songwriter.
Boy, he's great. I used to know him real well. I loved him.
Gene Pitney wrote the song He's a Rebel. He's a Rebel hits number one on the chart. While that record was number one on the chart, Gene Pitney was number two on the chart with his own hit called Only Love Can Break a Heart. But here's the thing. Gene Pitney never had a number one record on his own as an artist. He would have if his song was not blocking him from getting to number one. He was a great artist. But
oh, you better believe it.
The back in those days, boy, you did so much. You know, you talked about You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. We talked about the San Remo Festival. And also, you appeared on a lot of TV shows. You were on Bandstand a few times, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Appeared on Shindig, Hullabaloo, Hollywood A Go-Go. You toured with the Beach Boys for a while.
Yeah. I went over to Hawaii with them, and Glenn Campbell went with us. Glenn was playing guitar for me. He sang a few songs, too. He was a session picker there in L.A., and just the best, you know. He could sing, too, you know. You know what he would sing it back when we were doing the Beach Boys shows? He would sing things like Dang Me.
Really? He would do Dang Me, Glenn Campbell?
Yes.
Well, you also entertained the U.S. forces in Alaska. You were with Bob Hope, the legendary entertainer, and that must have been a great experience.
Oh, man, it was. It was like the top of my career. He was expert, professional showbiz master.
Right.
I mean, he was it, and such a nice fella, just as good as you can get.
I want to say a shout-out to my DJ friend, Marty Natchez. And Marty told me, if you're going to interview Jody Miller, you got to ask her about this particular song, Magic Town. Now, Magic Town was a song that eventually became a big record for a group called the Vogues, but I believe you did the first recording of that.
Yeah, there again is Cynthia Weil and Barry Mann, and they wrote it, and they gave it to Steve, but we just couldn't make it happen. For some reason, the promotion or something, or maybe it just wasn't in the grooves, it wasn't in the hit.
But you like the song.
Oh, yeah.
Going to listen to an edited version of it right now, dedicated to Marty Natchez. This is Jody Miller with Magic Town.
Are all paved with gold, but these dirty sidewalks are gray and concrete cold. They said neon lights were beautiful sights, but how about this one blinking in a room of light? And when
Magic Town, Jody Miller. You left Capitol Records, and then in the early 70s, you signed with a different record company, and you got a different record producer.
1970, I signed with Columbia out of Nashville, and so I started going to Nashville, and my producer was Billy Sherrill. So we had cut a song called Look at Mine, a Petula Clark song, which was a pretty good little hit. It wasn't real big or anything, but it was okay, you know, enough to get me back in the thing because of my career had taken a little fall after Magic Town. We tried to do some stuff at Capitol, and Steve had left, and so it just kind of broke up there at Capitol. I had run with them for 8 years, and my contract was up. They didn't renew it, so I was looking for another label. And I heard that record, Stand By Your Man, and it was like the greatest production. Music was changing a little bit, and Nashville was coming to the front, you know. So I called Billy, and he knew who I was. He said, yeah, come on, come to Nashville if you can, and let's meet and talk and everything. So I did. He offered me a contract, and so we did Look at Mine, the Petula Clark song, and had an LP with that, and it did pretty good. Got me rolling again, you know. But then we were looking for other songs, and I think Billy didn't know quite how to handle me. He told me, he said, you know, you're pop enough to not be pure country, but you're not country enough to be pop. He said, I'm going to have to find something. And him being a genius, you know, he did find something. He found the pop hits and turned them into country songs, because what happened with He's So Fine is we were sitting around the studio trying to come up with a song, and we read out a Billboard magazine where George Harrison was using melody of that song.
That's right.
He's So Fine, with My Sweet Lord.
That's right.
And we got the idea, well, why don't we cut He's So Fine country, because what George Harrison had done, he had put about three or four big, beautiful 12-string acoustical guitars on it. The He's So Fine chiffon deal was a R&B sound. What George did was make it a full sound with a beautiful rhythm guitar.
Right.
And so that rhythm guitar was something that Billy Sherrill used in his sessions religiously. He always had a ringing rhythm guitar, and he said, man, that song would be great, a little country song with a big guitar sound in it. And so that's what we did. We followed it as much as we could. We didn't put the Dulanes in there.
Right.
Because we couldn't, you know, it wouldn't be country if we did.
That's true. You put a Dulang and it's not country. But yeah. And not only did it get to number 5 on the country chart, but it also got to number 53 on the pop chart. We're going to listen to it right now. Jody Miller and He's So Fine.
He's so fine. Wish he were mine. That good-looking boy over there. The one with the cold black hair. I don't know how I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna make it mine. He's the envy of all men. It's just a matter of time. He's a soft-spoken guy. Oh, so sweet, kind of shy. Makes me wonder if I should even give him a try. But then again, he can't try. He can't try away forever. And I'm gonna make him mine if it takes me forever. Oh, he's so fine.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta be mine.
Oh, yeah.
Sooner or later.
Oh, yeah.
I hope it's not later. Do anything that he asks, anything to make him my own. 'Cause he's so fine,
so fine,
he's so
Jody Miller and He's So Fine, and you followed up He's So Fine with another fine record. This was one that Barbara Lewis did called Baby I'm Yours.
Yeah.
Great song.
What a great song.
And another one that got to number five for you.
I tell you one thing, it's a hard song to sing. And there was nobody that could cut it like Marvin Lewis did.
Again, Jody, you kind of made this song your own. And we're going to listen to it right now. Another big country hit for Jody Miller, Baby, I'm Yours. I wish we could do a mini-series on you because your career, you actually have a combination of careers, actually. And so we're trying to cover as much as we can in an hour between the dialogue and the music. We got three more country songs. One of them got to number four. Feek-wise, this was your highest charting country record. There's a party going on.
That song was written by Billy Sherrill and Glenn Sutton. They got together and wrote this for me. It had great promotion. Epic really got behind it and put it where it was. I'm just tickled to death.
See, there's some tempo changes in this one.
Yeah, that is a tricky little number.
Tricky.
I know Lynn Anderson was married to Glenn at that time.
Yes.
And she just really blew her stack to him. She said, "Why didn't you give that song to me?"
Let him go. Oh no. She remembers holding back her tears and wishing he was safe at home. Inside her two loving arms, sure do miss him. Two lips long to kiss him and once more whisper, baby, I love you. Times she remembers holding back her tears and wishing he was safe at home. Outside, she sees the car light, she hears the door and knows he's all right. And though he's been a million places, she never looks for lipstick traces. And in her heart, she knows.
And after that one got to number 4 on the country chart, you said, wow, that's good news.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, yeah, I'm just trying to connect everything here. Good news got to number 9 on the country chart, and by this time now, you were better known as a country artist than a pop artist.
I was.
What can you tell us about Good News?
We wrote that song in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
We needed one more song, and so Billy and Glenn got together, and Narrow Wilson was in there too, and he helped, and I don't know if I threw anything in there or not. I don't think I did, because I'm not naturally a songwriter, and I wouldn't have taken it seriously anyway, but that song was written in the studio, and I went ahead and learned it right then and cut it.
Up in the morning, something's missing. Could it be I taste your kissing? Lord knows I had a time with you last night. Out on the town, sure had a good time. When we got home, we had a great time. Good news, you're gonna stay my man. All the ways you hold me, all the ways you kiss me, all the ways you say you want me. We make love nice and easy. You can't imagine how much you please me. Don't ever, ever want to leave your loving arms. Got a good thing going, and I'll give it my best. As long as you're mine, I'll be your little love nest. Good news. Love has come my way. Hey, baby, don't you ever leave me. You're too good to be true. I'm gonna spend my lifetime dreaming sweet, sweet dreams of you. Always you hold me, always you kiss me, always you say you want me. We make love nice and easy. You can't imagine how much you please me. Don't ever, ever want to leave your loving arms. I got a good thing going and I'll give it my best. As long as you're mine, I'll be your little loving. Good news, love has come.
next one is one of my all-time favorites by you. It's called Darling, You Can Always Come Back Home. And
Is that right? That's my husband's favorite of all I've done.
Monty?
Monty Brooks.
Monty Brooks. Well, Monty, we're going to have to play this one for you.
Yes.
In addition to playing it for me, there's something about this song. It's very different.
And this song was written by Bill Rice and Jerry Foster. Did they write this especially for you?
It might have been. They wanted a hit by me. They were bugging Billy to record something that they wrote, and he said, well, give me something good enough, and I will.
And you did.
Yeah, right.
When the bitter winds of life have blown away your pride, and all your dreams of yesterday have disappeared or died, when you can't see tomorrow through the failures that you've known, darling, you can always come back home, where the meadow's always green and my love is like an eternal spring. My arms wait to hide you from the storm. There's a place that's sweet and warm where the fire of love burns on and on. Darling, you can always come back home. When there's nothing you can show for all the things you've done, and you wake up some morning, find you need someone. When you come to the end of the road you're walking on, darling, turn around and come back home, where the meadow's always green and my love is like an eternal spring. My arms wait to hide you from the storm. There's a place that's sweet and warm where the fire of love burns on and on. Darling, you can always come back home.
Jody Miller and Darling, You Can Always Come Back Home. I want to point out that Jody had a total of 27 charted country hits, which is very interesting for a singer that probably early in the game had no idea that she was ever going to become a country singer.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because when I was growing up, country music wasn't the prime music to listen to.
Right.
Well, you had Jimmy Rogers and Hank Williams, people like that, that were good songwriters. They cut their own stuff. It was very limited.
Your career kind of straddled pop music and country music. And before we close the show with a gospel song, I'm going to play one of my favorites of yours. It's called Country Girl. And a lot of different recording artists have done this one, but I like your version the best.
Oh, do you? Thank you. We got it out, and it was going up the charts. And I was opening for Don Rickles at the Riviera. I opened with that song. Don Rickles, one of the greatest people I ever worked with. He was the neatest guy, just so down to earth. And if you could take his wrath, you were his friend forever. He told me, I love that song.
I was born in the country. I was raised with the sun. Flowers were my pillow when the day's work was done. Down in the valley shone the bright neon sign. The call of the city life kept going through my mind. Oh yeah, the days of my childhood would soon be left behind. When the snow lay on the ground, Pa said the time had come when I could move to town. So I kissed goodbye to Mama, held on tight to Papa's hand. I saw a tear in Mama's eye, but I did not understand, 'cause I was just a country girl being brought up on the land.
Jody, all good things have to come to an end, including this show, and this has just been such a joy for me.
Oh, me too.
I've followed your career for so many years. It just amazed me how you kept kind of reinventing yourself, whether you're doing a Man and Wild song, or you're doing Queen of the House, or you're doing songs associated with other people. You just make them your own, and your pop, and your country, and now we're going to find out that you're also gospel. Did you record a few gospel albums?
Yeah, I did about 3 CDs. I became born again in 93, and really, really appreciated the fact that I could do this gospel music and maybe really make a difference. So I wanted to do it. I'm glad I did. I'm still doing it.
You're still performing?
Yes.
You have a website?
Yes, JodyMillerMusic.com.
Okay. And is there anything else before we introduce the last song? Anything else that I didn't bring up that you...
No, but I'd like to tell you, Ronnie, that it's been an honor and a privilege to be on your show, and I had so much fun today.
I was going to say the same thing. It's been an honor and a privilege to be talking to you. We're going to close with a gospel song, Bye Bye Blues. When people hear Bye Bye Blues, they may initially think of that song, Bye Bye Blues.
Yeah, what was a standard pop song. But this is a newer song written by Lucy Hemingway, and it's just Bye Bye Blues, you know. If you just look up, you know, you won't have any more blues.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
Jody, thank you so much. I wish you all the best, and we're going to play the title song from your gospel CD, Bye Bye Blues. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jody Miller.
Did I hear somebody say now, I got them old lonesome blues, feeling so low down, I just don't know what to do. Well, my friend, how come you're carrying them burdens all around? Shake them loose, or they're gonna drag you down to the ground. Right down to the ground. I used to sing a sad song like, whoa, 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 lonesome me. Then I heard about a man who died on Calvary. Now I sing Amazing Grace that saved a wretch like me. I'm gonna take a trip in that gospel ship, 'cause Jesus set me free. I'm gonna lay my burdens down, trade them in for a crown, on my way to that mansion in the sky. Try on my snow white gown that's been washed in the blood of the Lamb. Tell them old lonesome blues, bye bye blues, bye bye blues, bye bye. I'm gonna lay my burdens down, trade them in for a crown, on my way to that mansion in the sky. Try on my snow white gown that's been washed in the blood of the Lamb.
Well, that's the show. Now a couple of bonus tracks from Jody. Each became a top 40 country hit. From the year 1970, here's Jody singing Look at Mine.
If you think her clothes are better, look at mine. If she writes you nice love letters, look at mine. If you think her heart is willing, don't you wait to make that killing.
Stop a while, take your time, and get yourself to my place.
And look at mine. Look at mine, look at mine, look at mine.
Finally, from 1976, Jody sings When the New Wears Off Our Love.